Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Jay Ahern, Assistant Commissioner, Office of Field Operations at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Also joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel, Director of Homeland Securities at IBM. Jay, can you describe to us what is the Advanced Manifest Rule, or sometimes referred to as the 24-hour rule, and the guidelines surrounding the Trade Act, and what is required from the carriers before entrance into the U.S. ports? And if I may, what happens to them when they fail to meet these requirements?
Okay. I think it's important to kind of begin with talking about the layered strategy we had when we were put in place post 9/11. We realized, given the type of attacks this country was facing at the time and continue to face today, I would say, we needed to make sure that our ports of entry and the borders of the United States were not the first opportunity for us to intercept either something or someone of concern who posed a risk to this country. So we actually crafted the Trade Act of 2002 that actually got us advance information for not only maritime cargo that we got through the 24-hour rule, but also for air and land shipments as well. And what this does for us is it gives us the information electronically for very specific elements that we can then run through our automated targeting system to score for risk before containers can be put on a vessel destined for the United States. And last year, we had close to 12 main containers that came into this country. And currently, 82% of the containers that come to this country actually come through ports where we have our Container Security Initiative folks staffed overseas. But the CSI, the Container Security Initiative, would not be functional if we did not have this advanced information. So we can run it through our targeting systems, and if anything scores for risk, our officers on the ground, over 200 of them today, work with their host country counterparts to assess the risk, see if they can mitigate it through any additional information that the countries could provide, either through information or intelligence sources. But then if there's a need, we will then x-ray, physically examine, or use radiological detection devices to see if there's any radiation or nuclear emanations from that particular container. And if at the end of the day we cannot go ahead and mitigate that risk and eliminate it, we'll give a carrier a do not late order, so they will not be allowed to bring that into the United States until we can actually ensure that there's no risk to this country. So that gives us our layered extended border strategy, and that's the example we use for the maritime environment.
So you mentioned ATS a couple of times, the automated targeting system. Can you give us a little bit more detail about ATS, maybe some of the enhancements that you're working on to that system?
Absolutely. ATS for us is an exceptional system, and we use it for the maritime environment where we do ocean rules, where we actually focus specifically for maritime shipments coming to the United States, and we score them for risk. And we think that's smart for us to have the efficient borders I spoke about in the opening, where we didn't want to go ahead and stifle trade as we're trying to provide security. We get 100% of all the manifest information, but we then score it for risk. We also, under the automated targeting system for passenger, another component within ATS, and there's seven altogether. But the ATSP for passenger is one that's come under some scrutiny lately. And a lot of people think there's commercial sources of information we're using to score, and people have almost like a credit rating attached to them on how we score them, and that's just not factually correct. What ATS for passenger targeting does for us, it's a decision support tool for our frontline officers that we can have advanced information that we have by statute. The Aviation Transportation Security Act, signed into law after 9/11, provides advanced passenger information and passenger name record, basically the reservation information for travelers coming to the United States. And that's government-provided information that we're required to receive by law. It's also the same information that we could glean from every single person, those 400 million people coming into the country, because it's basic biographic information. And we add to that some of the reservation information that's on the record, basically the flight, the information, form of payment that you could see if you manually looked at somebody's airline ticket. We also then couple that with crossing history so that we then have the ability to take a look at what that might pose as kind of an assessment of that person's travel. We also have added into the automated targeting system, and I'm going to be cautious about giving any kind of operational detail that could compromise the program we have, but certainly it's important for us, and this is something the 9/11 Commission criticized government for, is not being nimble and responsive enough to emerging intelligence and informational trends. And every time when we sit in our classified briefings every day, we will adjust some of our rules based on what we see as the risk. And it could be for a given hour, a given day, and we use some of that information that we're getting in advance. And as opposed to sending that out through a muster module and having every officer on the front lines briefed to that detail, the system, the automated targeting system, is flexible enough that we can write targeting rules using that advanced passenger information, the passenger name record information, the crossing history, to see if there's any traits or characteristics that the system could identify and flag for the frontline officer, again, as a decision support tool. It's not like something that could be used for, you know, determining somebody's ability to board an aircraft overseas. This, again, has flags and sorts 87 million people by air coming into this country, sorts it into a very manageable number of people that may pose a risk, and I say may, and just flags them for the frontline officers to follow up on. And there's no numerical score that's attached to it. It's not like an individual's credit rating that shows that they've been delinquent on bills. We don't search into that type of information. But it's something that's critical for us in being able to manage the risk of the universe of 87 million people by air. And we think that's a very good way for us to manage our borders and keep, again, legitimate travel moving, but also looking for risk.
The volume of information is exceptional. Can you tell us a little bit about the National Targeting Center and how they relate to ATS?
The National Targeting Center, I think, is one of the greatest innovations that we did come up with post 9/11. Right after the events of 9/11, we created a very small office in our headquarters. And it wasn't much larger. And I know the viewers can't see the size of our studio here this morning, but it wasn't much larger than the office that where the studio we're sitting in right now. And we started bringing in some field experts in to try to do centralized national targeting because we had different units around the country targeting for risk. But we realized that the threat of terror was global and it was certainly national for us. And we didn't want it to just be resident in pockets around the country. So we established a national centralized location to get the automated advanced information we got through the Trade Act a few months later, and also now have the ability to have all the information for people and for cargo coming into the country run through the centralized location at the National Targeting Center. We're very proud of it. It's been something that's been exceptional for us to go ahead and deal with the intelligence community, deal with the other participating agencies. There's many other agencies that are actually physically co-located with us at the National Targeting Center where we can actually manage our very large workload of, again, over 400 million people coming into this country, the huge amounts of trade that we have coming into this country that, again, pose windows of opportunity for operatives or weapons of mass effect or destruction coming into this country. So it gives us the ability to do centralized national targeting so we can make uniform decisions throughout the country.
So, Jay, risk to international maritime cargo demands a robust security strategy that's able to identify, prevent, and deter threats at the earliest point in the international supply chain. The international supply chain is obviously complex and ever-changing. Can you talk a little bit about CSI, or the Container Security Initiative, and CTPAT, the Customs Trade Partnership Against Terrorism?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are other components of our layered strategy. As I stated earlier, it begins with information. We got that through the Trade Act. It needs to then be run through a centralized database. That's the automated targeting system, managed at a central location, the National Targeting Center. But also, it was for the purpose of getting information to put it out to our assets overseas. Again, we didn't want our borders to be the first time we encountered someone or something. So we do now have over 200 officers placed at over 50 locations around the world. And these are your major shipping ports to the United States. And at the 50 locations today, that accounts for 82% of the container traffic that comes to the United States. It runs through those CSI ports. We'll be opening 8 more ports by the end of this fiscal year and taking up to a total of 58. And just for those last 8 ports, it'll only get us to 85% of the container universe. And we think that's about where we should stop. But that gives us, again, the opportunity to go ahead and engage with our host country counterparts. We've entered into declaration of principles with each one of the countries so that we know what each other's responsibilities are. We're basically out there without authority, but through the declaration of principles, we work collaboratively with our host country counterpart to go ahead and deal overseas with those particular countries on, again, shipments of risk. CTPAT's another key part because certainly we think one of the greatest vulnerabilities in supply chain is point of stuffing. And having some of your largest corporations here in the United States and overseas engage with Customs and Border Protection in a partnership agreement. And this was brought about again right after 9/11 with the first group actually signing in November of 2001. We now have over 6,000 certified partners, and these are your largest companies worldwide that have agreed in a physical security assessment with us. And we've actually gone out to do validations worldwide on the supply chains to make sure that there are the right controls and procedures and physical and procedural security in place for companies overseas and throughout the supply chain so that we can have confidence and a higher degree of integrity at the point of stuffing and all the way through the supply chain as it makes it to our ports, to our CSI teams to make it all the way through the supply chain.
Jay, I have to tell you that I'm still grappling with the scale and scope of the operations here. Along with the CSI program that you talked about, can you tell us about collaboration and the criticality of collaboration with other federal agencies? And specifically, can you tell us a little bit about the partnership that you have with the Department of Energy and its Megaports program?
DOE and the Megaports Initiative folks have actually been one of our more critical partners. You know, another part of our layered strategy is the radiation detection capabilities, and we have radiation portal monitors being stationed at our ports of entry here in the United States. And I will tell you that just within the last year, we had the first installations occurring at our ports of entry as seaports. We're only at about 37% of the containers running through radiation portal monitors, because that's one of the last layers before a maritime container goes into the commerce of the United States. It goes through a radiation portal monitor. And we're now at 87%, and we'll be close to 100% by the end of this calendar year. And DOE has been a critical advisor and support for us in that function. But most importantly, we've joined in partnership with them over the last couple of years that every place we go for CSI, we do joint assessments together. And it is a full collaborative process for us at that point. We're out there where DOE is looking to do their radiation detection program overseas as part of a global network. And that certainly fits in with what we're trying to do with CSI. And we think it's better for the U.S. government to put one face out there to these foreign countries. And this is something that, you know, we continue to build upon. And perhaps we'll have a chance to talk later about what we're doing in partnership with them with the Secure Freight Initiative as well.
Now, you talked about the ports of entry. Are you able to do this kind of screening at the foreign ports, at the port of departure?
Yeah, we are. And we're going to be doing more of it very soon. What we currently have is a lot of the screening for radiation capabilities. There's only a few of the locations that we now have with DOE that are actually with radiation portal monitors in place where you can actually drive the trucks through. A lot of the other locations we have handheld devices, or some of the host country counterparts have devices of their own, and we complement that with large-scale X-ray systems as well. But as we move forward towards the next rollout of our overseas strategy with what we're doing with Secure Freight, about what we're doing in partnership with DOE and with our radiation detection capabilities overseas.
I'd like to continue for a moment on this theme of collaboration. Could you elaborate on the collaborative efforts your organization has with the other DHS subcomponents, specifically as it relates to the sharing of information used for passenger screening or cargo screening and the border security efforts?
Absolutely. We think certainly the partnerships that we need to have within DHS are critical for us. I mean, probably one of our closest partners is, you know, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. I mean, they're the investigative arm of a lot of the interdiction and the enforcement efforts we do at the ports of entry. And it's important for us to make sure that they have availability to a lot of the same information we do. Now, it's certainly proprietary or privacy-protected information is always maintained and controlled. But, you know, being within one department, we think it's a lot easier for sharing that information within the components that are our partners. ICE is certainly one. We're doing a lot with TSA as well, and then not only just the transportation security aspects of it, but also the people part. And we think that's critical for us to continue those partnerships. And one of our strongest partners we're working with right now is Commissioner Basham and also Commandant Thad Allen of the Coast Guard have chartered a senior guidance group to see what other opportunities we have for collaboration with the Coast Guard. We do a lot of things together for training, joint boardings, so there's not redundancy for the trade. When we're out, here comes Coast Guard to do a boarding of a vessel, and here comes CBP. We're doing that now collaboratively and jointly so that we don't have to have two boardings for industry. And we think that's smart. So we're sharing a lot of information on how we select vessels for targeting and for boarding and for the follow-up enforcement action.
Great. How is CBP managing its border and port security strategy? We will ask Jay Ahern, Assistant Commissioner, Office of Field Operations at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.